so that the voice of protest and dissent may always be heard. We must not try to destroy people by fear and slander, because if we do, we shall weaken the moral fiber of our own country. Another great lesson which our religious heritage has for us today is that we must not be led astray by self-righteousness. We must remember that the test of our religious principles lies not just in what we say, not only in our prayers, or even in living blameless personal lives, but in what we do for others. I'm going to repeat that because I think it's of vital importance to this meeting. We must remember that the test of our religious principles lies not just in what we say, not only in our prayers, not even in living blameless personal lives, but in what we do for others. It's all too easy for church-going people to be satisfied with a superficial standard of morals. It's all too easy to sit in judgment on the shortcomings of others. It's all too easy to feel morally superior because we go to church and profess to follow the faith of our fathers. We must remember that in his ministry on earth, Jesus delivered his strongest condemnation against those who were superficially and publicly good. The scribes and the Pharisees he attacked were the respectable people of his day. They were the leaders of the community who set the standards for others. To them he said, "Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye." Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Oh, would that we could live by that. Self-interest can blind us today, just as it blinded the scribes and the Pharisees of biblical times. We must always be on our guard against this danger. If we are to respond to our religious heritage, we must be guided by the principle of charity. Charity in the biblical sense, of love for one's fellow man. This is the greatest virtue, without which other virtues are of little worth. We must work for morality in public life and in private life. You can't make an honest man by law. He has to be raised by the rules of the 20th chapter of Exodus and the Sermon on the Mount if he has the right moral fiber to become an ethical public or private citizen. We must have high standards of conduct, but even if we do all these things, still not enough. The final question that will be asked us as individuals and as a society is, what have we done for our fellow men? What have we done to ease his burdens, to give him greater opportunity, to help him in time of trouble, and to make the world a better place for him to live in? For unless we can answer these questions, we will not have carried out our lives, in our lives, the religious heritage which has come to us from our forebears. Today, our problem is not just to preserve our religious heritage in our own lives and our own country. Our problem is a greater one. It is to preserve a world civilization in which man's belief in God can survive. Only in such a world can our own nation follow its basic traditions and realize the promise of a better life for all our citizens. Today, the whole human enterprise is in danger, in serious danger. On the one hand, we have to resist the expansion of a power that is hostile to all we believe in. It is a power that denies the rule of law, the value of the individual, and belief in God. It is a power which has become militant and aggressive, using the weapons of deceit and subversion, as well as military might. On the other hand, we must do all we can to prevent the outbreak of another war. Such a war, using modern instruments of destruction, would be more terrible than anything the world has ever experienced. It would make a battleground of the crowded and complex cities of the modern world. It might well shatter the whole economic social system and plunge mankind back into barbarism. This is the great problem we must meet. We cannot yield to Soviet communism without betraying the ideals we live for. We cannot have another world war without jeopardizing our civilization. In this perilous strait, our greatest source of strength, our greatest hope of victory, lies in the God we acknowledge as the ruler of us all. We turn in faith to Him to give us the strength and the wisdom to carry out His will. We ask Him to lead us out of the dangers of this present time into the path of peace. In this crisis of human affairs, all men who profess to believe in God should unite in asking His help and His guidance. We should lay aside our differences and come together now. Never have our differences seemed so petty and so insignificant as they do in the face of the peril we confront today. It's not just this church or that church which is in danger. It's not just this creed or that creed that is threatened. All churches, all creeds are menaced. The very future of the Word of God, the teaching that has come down to us from the days of the prophets and the life of Jesus, is at stake. For some time, I have been trying to bring a number of the great religious leaders of the world together in a common affirmation of faith. And that common affirmation, as I said a while ago, is in the 20th chapter of Exodus and in the 5th, 6th, and 7th chapters of the Gospel according to St. Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount. And I've been trying to make a common supplication to the one God that all creeds and all religions profess. I've asked them to join in one common act that will affirm these religious and moral principles on which we all agree. Such an affirmation would testify to the strength of our common faith and our confidence in its ultimate victory over the forces of Satan that oppose it. I'm sorry to say that it has not yet been possible to bring the religious faiths together for this purpose of bearing witness in one united affirmation that God is the way of truth and peace. Even the Christian churches have not yet found themselves able to join together in a common statement of their faith that Christ is their master and their redeemer and the source of their strength against the host of irreligion and danger to the world and the that will be the cause of world catastrophe. They haven't been able to agree on as simple a statement as that. I've been working at it for years. Despite the barriers that divide the different churches, there's a common bond of brotherhood that underlies them all. We must continue our effort to find those common ties and to bring the churches together in greater unity in a crusade for peace. In this way, we shall come closer to the one God who is the Father of us all. In this way, we shall find greater power to meet the troubles of our time. The way to such unity is long and hard, but we must continue to strive for it, and we must ask God's help. If we really have faith, God will give us what we are not able to attain by our own efforts. May God grant that we speak together as brothers of His power and His mercy, and bear witness of Him against those who deny Him. And may God unite the churches and the free world to bring us peace in our time.